Welcome to the Women Who Fights podcast. We empower female fighters to take full agency over their training. Our goal is to celebrate and inspire others with the incredible action women and allies are taking to level the playing field. We talk to experts, uncover prejudice, and champion what's driving our progress.
And today we have Nikki with us, Dr. Nikki Keys, and she's returning back. We've had a fantastic podcast with Nikki before, so we're just going to give a very brief intro. Nikki's a Cambridge graduate. I didn't know that until I came to your talk. Now a lecturer in medicine at UCL, and she conducts clinical research in sports and dance endocrinology. Medical journey there. Her aim is to redefine optimal health and fitness for the individuals. Now, we are here to specifically talk about the new book, which is Hormones, Health and Human Potential. That book is like a new Bible. So, Nikki, tell us everything about this book. And also, I want people that are listening to this to be like, I really need this book.
Wow.
Well, let's go.
Okay, let's go.
So, no pressure.
No pressure.
I mean, I suppose it goes back to why did I write this book?
Mm-hmm.
Because over the years, I'm getting old now, so over the last 30 years working as a medical doctor, and the whole reason I am a doctor in the very first place is because I want to help each individual reach their full potential, whatever that looks like for them. Whether it's winning an Olympic gold, great. Whether it's just being able to do your best, you know, and get the most out of life. So that's really what I've been, that's my work as a doctor. And I think that maybe we've become a little bit diverted with all the amazing medical advantage. Let's not say, you know, this is really important, all the interventional medicine, surgeries, medication, etc. But it just seems to me maybe we've lost sight a little bit of health, not illness. What is health? Health is not the absence of illness. It's actually positive well-being in physical, mental and social health. So that's what I really have become, you know, realised over my years of practising medicine. This is really what I want to really focus on. So that's what I've been, I still offer people. I offer virtual appointments to help them navigate their way through, you know, what they should do to harness their hormones, the internal messengers, to reach that full potential. But the thing is, I see, you know, lots of individual people, and it gives me joy every time I see somebody and help them in this way. But I thought, well, why don't, if I write a book and put all what I've learned as a doctor during this journey and sort of things that I think are really important. And actually one of my endorsers for the book sort of summed it up, Chrissy Wellington, who I think is a 5-time Ironman champion, female athlete, yes. And she said she really loved the way I'd poured everything, my knowledge, my passion, into the book. And that's exactly what I've tried to do. I've tried to put it all there, explain to people, because that's the other thing. I wanted to explain to people why. You know how it is when you go to the physio and they say, do these exercises. I'm a patient. I want to know why. I want to know why. Why am I doing this? Because that will give me motivation to do it. So that's the other thing. I want the book to empower people with that information, the knowledge about these amazing hormones, why they're so important. You should pay attention to them, right? And try and nurture them. So I'm giving them the why, and also hopefully giving them the tools, you know, top tips you'll find in every chapter of, okay, what the top tips, what are you going to go away and do now? And of course, in the book, there's a lot of focus on women, because come on, women are really interested and fascinating, especially their hormones, most complicated. So we really have to, you know, go into detail about that. And also the other aspect of the book is that, well, listen, one thing is, because I'm a dancer, it's not, parts, part one, part two, and it's not chapters. They are acts and scenes, just a little bit of a twist on it, you know, just a little bit of a twist. And also the second act of the book, we go through the seven ages of man and woman, a la Shakespeare. So we say, you know, because what I need to do to be healthy is going to be different from you youngsters, right? Because my hormones are different, right? So I go through what, according to your age as well, you know, okay, now you need to think about different things because your hormones have changed. So yeah, that's the book in a summary. So I think hopefully it will help people understand, you know, and also to tailor it for them. That's the other important thing, rather than all the generic advice out there that won't always be relevant for you personally. I want to give you the tool, I want to give you the understanding, and I want to give you the practical tools, what to do to reach your full potential. Oh. How's that?
Beautiful. And just to go back, why? Because you want to, you're talking about like having a high quality of life as opposed to not just being ill. And why endocrinology? Why was that? Why is that as your focus so important?
Yeah, cool. So the opening quote, oh, by the way, the book will have a little quotes for each scene. I like that. And my opening sort of gambit is what Hippocrates said. Hippocrates is often referred to as the father of medicine, but I think actually he's the father of health, you know, because health, like we said, is this positive thing. And he said, if we could give each individual just the right amount of exercise, just the right amount of nutrition, not too little, not too much, we would have found the surest way to health. My goodness, that chap was onto something. He would have been an amazing coach, wouldn't he? He really, but the thing is, he said this, but he didn't understand why this was. Well, first of all, my book explores, was he right? And if he was right, why is he right? And the answer comes in the form of hormones, right? Hormones are internal chemical compounds. I mean, they are described as messengers, but listen, they do much more. They're not just couriers. Because when these hormones arrive at a cell, they go into the cell. They make a beeline for the nucleus where the DNA lives, and they determine gene expression. So they say what proteins to be made, how many, what, when, etc. So, for example, you do your training, you have your recovery nutrition, I hope, and then the hormones will spring into action. They go to the nucleus and say, hey, listen, we need some muscle protein, please, right? To recuperate, regenerate, you know, etc. So the hormones are the link between what Hippocrates was saying, training load and nutrition is what he was saying, and then hormones are the link between what you do on the outside and what happens on the inside, and therefore effectively determine your health. So that's why I'm arguing the point, and actually, you know, I think with good reason, that hormones are this, that's why I did endocrinology in the first place. Because I like complicated, right? I like difficult, I like detective work. And the hormones are elusive because you can't see them, you can't touch them. You know, when you get injured or you break something, it's pretty obvious. You know, you see, it feels sore, you see the broken bone, you know, it's like, you know, that's kind of obvious. But it's not obvious what hormones are doing, is it? It's not obvious. You can't see them with the naked eye and whatever. So that's why I think they haven't been sort of fully understood how important they are. Crucial for health because they bring your DNA to life. So that's why I made the focus of the book about hormones because, well, that's my area of expertise. But because I was always being fascinated by what is this link between our behaviours and our health, what's happening, and that's the answer. That's why I really focused on the hormones as being the key players.
I've got a very broad question, but how would you know that there's something to be? This, you need to investigate your hormonal health, your hormonal balance. How would an individual know? Well, are there any signs, like flags?
Sure, well, yeah, and this is another thing where I think it's often gone missed because hormones are invisible. And also, they have a broad reach. I mean, travelling in the bloodstream, you know, let's take one hormone. Let's take estradiol. Come on. the female, the main, I mean, men have estradiol as well, but obviously women, we want to champion estradiol, right? They're the most active form of estrogen. So for example, estrogen, you can go in the blood all over the body. So it goes to your bones, right? Makes your bones strong. Goes to your soft tissue, makes your muscles strong and, you know, ligaments, tendons, etc. Goes to your gut, helps with gut health. Goes to your brain, helps with mental function, right? And specifically for women, of course, the reproductive tract. So if one just one hormone can have all this vast array of effects, now imagine we bring in all, the whole hormone orchestra, right? All of them doing things all over the body. So to be fair, it's actually quite tricky to pin down because, you know, sometimes you're sort of feeling tired and, you know, there could be many reasons for that, and also hormones would affect other things. So, yeah, it is, it's true. It's difficult, but I think that if you know that what you do, your actions, your choices, your timing of your behaviours, you know, through the book I've explained that these really have an influence on your hormones and your health, and actually the default is, look, I'm not feeling quite right, so let's really look at my behaviours and try and, you know, sort of tune into my hormones. Because I think lots of the problems arise when, you know, we don't realise what hormones are. We don't realise that they're trying to do the best they can, by the way. And they've got their own schedule running inside us. If, you know, their own sort of pacemaker, you know, like cortisol varies over 24 hours. The female hormones, of course, we know varies in this way over the cycle. But then if we're trying to do something on the outside that's contradicting what your body clock is trying to do, your hormones are trying to do, then it's not going to end well. I mean, in medical terms, we call this circadian misalignment. So you definitely are going to feel ill and not great. So I think even just by knowing this and trying to align your behaviours to what the hormones are doing, then, you know, that is the surest way to health. When push comes to shove, if that doesn't work, then I agree, you need to come see me. Yeah, and we'll try and figure out what, if there is. Sometimes, you know, me just talking through with people, you know, I don't even have to do a blood test. By the time I've asked them what's going on, what are they doing? You know, when you're eating, what you're eating, when you're doing your exercise. I mean, you know, I don't even have to do a blood test. It's like, okay, well, I can see why, what the problem here might be. Of course, doing a blood test and seeing what the hormones are is, of course, useful. But you see what I mean? I'm trying to give people, rather than just, you know, set by default saying, oh, gosh, I've got a test. It's like, well, let's try and look at what facts we have. And yes, we might have to test the hormones if actually it seems a bit strange, things aren't quite adding up. Or, in certainly in terms for an athlete, to show them the data. You know, because sometimes it's difficult to convince people. It's like, honestly, you know, training really hard without any food is not a good idea. And that's why you're feeling really bad. And that's why your periods have stopped. But if, you know, they want the evidence. And it's like, well, now, look, let's do a blood test and you see what your estradiol is. It's like, there you go. So that's useful for evidence, you know?
I mean, just going back to, you talked about alignment quite a lot there. So when you say becoming in line, aligning with your hormones, what exactly does that mean?
Yeah. Well, you see, the thing is that it's knowing that your hormones have their own schedule, right? And then you try and sort of match up or you know, integrate with what you're doing with that, so you're aligning in that sense. So I know lots of people, you know, and we mentioned the word already, balancing your hormones. I prefer to use the term that you're balancing your behaviours. Listen, hormones know quite well how to balance themselves, thank you very much. They've been doing that for millions of years of evolution. They know how to sort themselves out, right? They can do it. It's not their problem, it's your problem. You know what I mean? So, but if you understand that they're doing the best they can. So to give them the best chance of doing that and actually helping them do that, harnessing your hormones, it's about the balance of your behaviours and aligning your behaviours with what your hormones are doing. So for example, I mean, hopefully no one's doing this, but for example, you know, getting up at 3 o'clock in the 4 o'clock in the morning and going for a fasted run That is a scheduling conflict, by the way. That is misalignment. That is doing something when the hormones are going to say, what the heck are you doing? We can't support this. So that's what I mean by alignment, aligning what you're doing with your hormones, which will be slightly different for each person. And of course, with women, we have, you know, the extra challenge, shall we say, of the female hormones, you know, at various times. So that's also, that's what I mean by alignment, aligning what you're doing with your hormones to get the most out of them and therefore get the most out of you, okay?
So I would presume if you are not using any type of contraception and you're not pregnant and you're having regular menstrual cycle, you would then be in tune with your cycle. So you would feel the, you know, when the estrogen's going up, you'd, you know, you generally, well, I personally, I always feel more energetic. So then I'd listen to their energy.
Yeah,
and then
there you go.
As
exactly.
It then started to dip after and you enter PMS, I know that I'm very accident prone. So I wouldn't be, you know, like, you know, I'd change my training.
You won't be doing brain surgery then.
No, exactly. So that's what you mean. And how would you work with it if you were, say, on contraception or pregnant? How can you, or, you know, menopausal, like post, you know, you've had all of that, those sorts of things. How does that change for each of those?
Sure. Well,
situations?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's just to go over what you said, which is perfect. So over the menstrual cycle, the hormones will vary, assuming you're not on contraception, pregnant, etc. And so exactly as you described, you have got to try and tune into those. And I think it's very, and this is important, it's very personal. You describe what is quite common, that women tend to feel quite good in that bit just before ovulation when the estrogen is high. And equally, they don't feel quite so good and they'll need more recovery, etc. In that those 2 weeks before menstruation. So that's generally true. But I do want to highlight, and which I say in my book, you know, don't be think there's something wrong with you if that's not the case for you, because it's very individual. And in fact, there was a professional cyclist who wrote a very interesting piece in a magazine a while back, and she said she felt exactly the opposite to what you said. She said she actually felt worse then. So I just want to make that point. But this but the principle is the same. Get to know your own hormones. Get friendly with them. Find out what's going on. I'm a great one for writing it down. I know we're all talking about tracking these days, but listen, in the old-fashioned days when we only had pen and paper, anyway, you get what I mean. Anyway, just get to know your own cycle and see what's good for you. So that's, I agree exactly what you've said. That's important. Right, so what other times? So if you're on hormonal contraception that suppresses the hormones, especially the contraceptive pill, the progesterone only sort, some, not all of them suppress the hormones entirely, but nevertheless still, you're probably not going to have, you know, a bleed, a menstruation. So it's tricky to know where you are in your cycle anyway. So I have to be honest. And that's also, I don't know the answer to that. But again, I think it goes on to the individual. Then, but be aware. I mean, some people take hormonal contraception, not for contraception, because actually, you know, it could be a medical reason. They've got really painful periods, for example, and they're taking the hormonal contraception, switching their hormones off on purpose. So, you know, that, again, it's not going to be, oh, every single woman, you have to do this. But you have to be, I think, having this conversation so women are aware. If you're on hormonal contraception, you won't be making your own hormones. And when you get that bleed, it's a withdrawal bleed, it's not your own period, okay? So I think it's a case of just individual seeing what's going on if you're on hormonal contraception. Pregnancy. Yep, been there, done that. So again, it's a very recurring theme. It's do what you're used to doing. So pregnancy, we definitely want to encourage women to stay active. Okay,
right? Even in the first trimester where you're flat.
Well, listen, this is what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Be active doing what you usually do. This is not the time. If you, like me, I'm not a runner. It's not the time to start running marathons, for example, right? And if you're doing the type of exercise, if you're doing very intense type of fighting, yes, I think maybe just calm it down a little bit, especially in that first trimester, because the thing is then it won't be obvious that you're pregnant, and so everyone that, you know, won't necessarily even know. But again, you know, it's up to you. Just and you'll feel probably okay. You might feel you have a bit of morning sickness. By the way, it's not morning sickness, it's sickness throughout the day.
It's day sickness. Anyway, day and night.
It's nausea. Anyway, we divert. But generally, you won't, you know, other than that, you'll be feeling okay-ish, you know? So, again, yes, I agree with you. Just be a little bit cautious in that first trimester, even if you're doing a normal type of exercise for you. Just keep the intensity down a bit. And then as you go on and you know, you develop a bump, actually, you're not going to feel like it. You're not going to feel like going full guns, you know? But you should definitely keep going. I mean, people remember me, I was still doing my ballet class with a big tummy, and they said, gosh, yes, you were incredible. You were doing spinning around and stuff like this. And also for my second son, I was actually in the swimming pool when contraction started. But I'm used to swimming.
Did you stay there? Let's do it here.
No, I was thinking about a water bath. No, well, that's what I was thinking, a water birth, but I thought, no, the pool won't be happy with it, you know, anyway. So, no, I did get out. Anyway, but you see what I mean? So, but my point is, do stay active, but be sensible, right?
Nikki, is it just a flat progesterone, or are there more hormones there?
High progesterone and estrogen throughout pregnancy. And estrogen high, both high. And right. Prolactin also high for the breastfeeding. Right. The other hormone that goes high is a hormone called relaxin, which, as the name suggests, beautifully named, is it not? It does relax your ligaments and tendons because you want the baby to come out, right?
Right.
But, again, for stretching, being a dancer, we love flexibility. Ooh. But don't think, oh, I can do more flexibility. Just be careful. Don't overdo the stretching for anybody. But I write about this in my book, and there's some sort of tips for pregnancy. So pregnancy,
really? Pregnancy.
Pregnancy. Oh, I cover it all. Pregnancy, yes, we have to remember those little things, and then going on to menopause, which was the other time in the female hormone odyssey, is when now the estrogen and progesterone are going to be very low. Okay, so yes, now that's a new challenge. And in my book, I describe, absolutely, we need to have a look at our lifestyle behaviours, our exercise, type of exercise, more strength training, nutrition, more protein, you know, make sure you're getting as much sleep as possible. Of course, fundamental. But also, there's a big discussion about HRT. And that in my experience, and I work a lot with, women of all ages, including menopausal masters athletes who want to keep doing whatever they're doing. And so, you know, we talk through the best forms of HRT. I cover that in detail. So, but your first question about what happens when you go through these different, this female hormone odyssey, absolutely. We have to take that into account with what we're doing, because the hormones are going to be very different. But also this individual approach is really super important.
Mm. Absolutely. I mean, let's say you're in your 20s or your 30s and you're healthy, but maybe you've got something else is going on, you know, maybe you've got some imbalance and, you know, you're aware of it. And just how would you, like, what are long-term impacts of not dealing with a hormonal problem?
Yeah.
And also in a bracket to continue with this, who's going to figure it out? Because the GPs, if there's not an illness, they're not going to actually dig deeper.
Exactly. So, I mean, the person that knows your body best is you. So if you know, and hormones have all these diverse effects. So if you just, even if you can't put your finger on it, but there's just something not right. And women are actually quite good, about this. And I see a lot of women who've come and just instinctively say, well, look, my periods have stopped or become very irregular, and I've just been told, oh, that's by the GP, that's okay because I'm doing exercise. And it's just instinctively didn't feel that that was right, or that it was right to go on the pill or something like this. So I think at that point, yes, read my book. And, there's only one of me I accept, but this is exactly this is what I do every day. This is if you're right, of course, you should go and see your GP. But yes, I know. I mean, you know, as the name suggests, they're general practitioners and they're very busy and they are dealing more with illness than health. So if you really are stumped and just think that there's something going on, but you can't put your finger on it, you're not getting any joy, then, get in contact. I run a virtual appointments for people, an advisory service, I'm calling it. It's health advice, right? I'm just sort of going to point you in the right directions. Because like I've described, sometimes having a really relaxed discussion, which GPs won't have the time to do. Often it's something actually that can be fixed without medication or something, you know? I find a lot of women who are doing training fasted and all this sort of thing, just little details which the person can sort out themselves. Of course, if it does emerge that actually I'm thinking, look, I think we do need to do a blood test, then of course we go along that route and whatever it is, you know? But sometimes I'm the sort of first port of call to try and see if there's something obvious that we can fix and get everything aligned again. If not, then yes, we'll have a look at the blood test and see if there's something else going on.
Nikki, if you see symptoms, my experience with doctors has been, I've got some symptoms.
Not good.
I've got some symptoms of bloating, of this and that, skin that's flaking. And every time the answer is, must be stress. And I don't know how, do I need to quit my job? How do I adapt to harness my hormones? Like, I'm trying to figure it out myself, but I'm definitely reading your book. I will definitely do that.
Well, but you're absolutely right. I mean, it's just this general thing about, stress and whatever.
That's life, though.
Exactly. So it's a case of trying to manage it, but there are top tips in the book, but also as well, sometimes, that personal touch, and that's what I take the time to talk about, because everyone has got a slightly different schedule. Do you know what I mean? Slightly different jobs, slightly different this and that. And so, there will always be something that you can do, even if you've got a super busy job, and even if, you're trying to get in your training. It's just like me, the independent outside person, objective, looking at it and saying, well, hold on a sec. There's something there I can see that you can change. It won't be as drastic, hopefully, as giving up your job, but, it will be something. There's always going to be something, which you probably haven't had the time to process yourself, because you're in the moment, you're just trying to, get on with it. And then if I can have a look from the outside and say, well, actually, look, here's what you can do to manage this. You're right, this word stress, it's like, I hate it. It's so general and vague, isn't it? So trying to look at... And also the thing is, there are so many sources of stress. And the body doesn't distinguish. It doesn't come with an email title. This stress is from work. This stress is from not eating enough. This stress is from training a lot. This stress is from having an argument. It doesn't break it down.
Is stress, aka cortisol, is that what it is?
Yes. So really, technically, we should say these things are stressors.
Right.
Provoking a stress response, if you want to be really pernickety about it, which I do like to be, right? So all these things I've just listed, those are processed by the brain, and the chief, the conductor of the endocrine orchestra, no surprise, is located in the brain. Mm-hmm. So it keeps a watching brief on what's happening inside and what's going on outside. And so that's all processed. It's like there's lots of stuff going on. So that signals to the adrenal cortex, the adrenal glands, yes, we need some cortisol here, just a fight or flight, thing, let's get going. And cortisol is a good thing. If you're facing a saber-toothed tiger, I can tell you, cortisol is a good thing, right? But you don't want that all the time, because we're programmed to respond in this way, the hormones. They're trying to do their best, but they, haven't taken account of the fact that with modern life especially, there's lots of other things, stressors, that will trigger the cortisol. And although cortisol is very important for an emergency situation, you don't want it high all the time, because cortisol tends to favour the deposition of fat and all this sort of stuff like this, which you don't really want, do you? You want this nice variation. You don't want it just like sort of stuck at a certain level all the time. But yeah, cortisol is the stress, in inverted commas, hormone, yes.
Mm. Can we talk a little bit about like weight cutting, or like for athletes who do sports where you need to be a certain mm-hmm. weight, whether that's fighting or climbing, because obviously if you're climbing you want to be lighter, or yeah, anything like that, and other things as well, which are maybe like just some key things that, like, I know, yeah, for example, not eating enough in general can really mess with your hormones. Maybe like for some people coffee is really bad, and that's individual, and also, you know, just go through a couple of things other than stress, which I guess put our stressors, but like what they are.
Well,
and why.
That's definitely one of them. The fueling thing. I mean, I totally appreciate, by the way, you know, the thing about body weight, you know, it applies to any sport where gravity is involved. And seeing as we live in on Earth, that's pretty much all of them. So you mentioned some obvious ones, though. Climbing, I just gave a talk at a climbing symposium. So that's obviously against gravity. But also road cycling, it's against gravity up a hill, for example. Running, against gravity. You know, pretty much everything is against gravity. But also we have the specific weight category sports, you know, and that. And yeah, basically that's not good for your hormones, is it? As you said, not eating enough overall isn't great, but specifically really aggressive weight loss, weight cutting, you know, that is, yeah, it's not good for hormone health, full stop, because that's a massive stressor. Not eating enough, like you say, overall, yeah, that is a stressor, which will definitely provoke cortisol, by the way. But doing a really effectively a starvation thing, that is really putting the body under in an emergency situation. So it's not good right then and there. But also, you're right, you know, if you keep doing that, it sort of accumulates, doesn't it? It catches up with you. So, but what to do about that? Well, that's a real tricky one for the weight cutting, and probably something out of my remit entirely. Need to go and speak to those sports bodies and organisations, and it's like, what's going on here? But by the way, it's in some sports also, like rowing, they have to be the certain categories of weight, you know? And it's just a little bit, not ideal, but I haven't got any control over those rules and regulations. And also, by the way, if you're doing this aggressive weight cutting, and so which is not good for your health, and it's like, yeah, I'm the lighter category, but now you're a shadow of your former self, literally. You know, you haven't got the strength. So actually, would you have been better just staying at your physiological weight for you? And okay, maybe you're at the lower end of that next category up, but guess what? You're going to be healthy and strong now, right? Compared to all those ones who have come down for the category above, who've been starving themselves, you see? So I think that's an argument we should also, something we should be discussing more, which I'm, maybe you are.
Nikki, are men, I'll tell you how we change the narrative and how we change the regulations. What's the impact?
Like women, the bosses, yes.
What's the impact on men? Because if there's impact on male hormones and testosterone, I'll tell you how quickly that's going to change.
Well, you see, the thing is, ironically, yes, there is. Also.
There is.
Right? That absolutely is. Yes, we did, not me, just me, but certainly I've done studies with fighters, right, published. I've also done a study with male cyclists, and it is the same thing. The thing is that male hormones, listen, they're not as beautiful and complex and interesting as female hormones, right? So they're a little bit more robust, the hormones I'm talking about, not the person, by the way. You know, right? Because from an evolution point of view, you know, women, yes, you know, getting pregnant, etc., reproduction, you know, we have to have finely tuned hormones, because there's no way you should be getting pregnant if you're going to go and then weight cut. You see what I mean? So that's from an evolution point of view why the men's hormones are a little bit more resistant, okay, to this. But it definitely still happened in my study of male cyclists. Those cyclists that were doing fasted training, not eating many carbs, etc., those cyclists had significantly lower testosterone than their counterparts and poorer bone health. So there is evidence that men are affected by this, what we're talking about. But I think part of it is a sort of a cultural thing, because one of the male cyclists said, how would you feel if you were told you had the female athlete triad, you see? It's seen as not as weak and, you know, to admit, look, I'm feeling actually really terrible. And, you know, my libido is like, you know, it's actually maybe that's what they say. I mean, I say, listen, we're talking about periods, so you have to sort of come on. You can do this. You can talk about other things. You know what I mean? So it's partly, I think, that cultural thing that maybe they aren't speaking out about it as well.
Absolutely. And in our world of fighting sports, imagine how macho
exactly
men
exactly
are.
What I mean. So they would feel pathetic if they said, well, actually, do you know what, libido is like, and you know, morning erections, you know, not happening. It's actually maybe awkward. But like I say, my counter argument to that is, look, we're talking about your health and your performance, not your image or whatever it is. And, you know, women, we are talking, thankfully, more about periods and we're having this discussion. So, you know, you kind of got to, get up to date, guys. We need to support each other effectively, you know? So we, you know, as women, I'm sure we would maybe help the men. You know, if they're going to speak up about it, then sure, we'll support you. And that's what I did with some of the cyclists who found it very difficult. But when they said that, I said, would you be willing to, you know, write something, an article with me? And, you know, they did, and stuff like this. And so, you know what I mean? To encourage them to speak out and saying, look, it's not all easy for them as well, you know? So we need to support each other as well, I think.
I mean, I heard something which was like, talking about how fertility for men, I mean, fertility for women is obviously very important, but your, you know, fertility for men is like an identity thing as well. It's like, and the irony that, you know, people who are doing weight cutting sports in a fighting sport are going out being super macho, but secretly, or maybe in private, actually having, because it has to affect you. You know, they weight cut so much. It's like, some of them look starved. But then they as soon as they have their in MMA, as soon as you have your weigh-in, you have 24 hours before your fight. So that's why they can weight cut so significantly and still actually fight. Whereas if you had the weight cut as you walked on, they wouldn't be able to weight cut so much because they would literally be like, you know, they'd have nothing.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, quite. What can I say? That's why the rules need to change. But also, you know, but you're right, in terms of male fertility, yes. I mean, although, you know, typically the stereotype is, oh, it's, you know, women are the only ones that are worried about it, you know, but actually, no. Certainly the men I've seen, anyway, athletes, that is something on their mind, you know? And we know that, certainly if you've got low testosterone and you're not having morning erections, I mean, you know, that's not a good starting point. It's not going to end, you know. So it does affect. I think it's, again, something we should be talking about. And because, you know, ultimately we're all on the same team. So if men and women could say, look, this is not good for health. And, you know, about the weight cutting and the weigh-ins and all that sort of thing. It makes no sense because it's like, who is this actually for? What, you know, you see what I mean? It's like, what is the purpose of this? The purpose is the athletes want to go and perform to their best, right? Isn't that the whole purpose of that your amazing sport? You see, you're fighting. That's what we want to see. We want to see really good fights. We want to see these two athletes going head to head. You know what? That's what the athlete wants to do. And that's what we as spectators want to see. We don't want to see, athletes, as you say, looking starved, looking ill, because they are ill. And we don't. That makes me really uncomfortable as a spectator that I'm supporting this. You know, that I would go and watch this, because if you go and watch it, it's saying we agree with this. You see what I mean? So it just it makes no sense. But again, this is now complicated because, you know, but certainly we've been through this in many sports. And in ballet, for example, we're going through the same thing at the moment, saying, look, does an audience, it's also the responsibility of the audience to speak up and say, look, they would much prefer to see healthy people on stage rather than seeing, being sort of feeling uneasy as a spectator, an audience saying, thinking, gosh, that person looks really ill and, you know, worrying that they're going to hurt themselves, you see? So I think, you know, it's not just fighting, it's other sports and things like this. You know, we have to really try and tackle this problem because it's for the person, it's for the individual. They want to perform to their best on the day, yes, but also, you know, what happens in their life later on. You know, it's going to be really sad when you see athletes who have to retire early or really ill later on in their life. You know, that's really, you can't, this is people's lives we're talking about.
When you say really ill later on in life, what kind of, sort of, how can that present itself if you've got, if you've disturbed your hormones?
For the female athletes, I did a study of retired dancers. And those dancers whose periods had stopped, they still had actually quite poor bone health later on when they retired. I mean, before the age of menopause, you know. And so they are storing up problems, potentially. Osteoporosis. I mean, it's called the silent killer for a reason, by the way. You know, because if you fall over and fracture your bone easily, you know, then it leads to all... You see what I mean? So that's one thing about, like, being ill. But also we know all the extreme weight-cutting things, you know, this is not good for hormones, metabolic health. So, you know, metabolic health, you know, in terms of risk of cardiovascular disease, all this sort of thing. So it could be potentially storing up problems for the future.
Mm. Could I ask something? I mean, it might be very, very, very ignorant, but what is the impact of someone doping and having extra testosterone? Is there a long-term impact?
Yes.
Oh, there is?
Because, well, there's an evidence from a study, I think it was in Australia, where bodybuilders were taking testosterone, mm-hmm. And which will, if you take lots of external hormone, it will suppress your own internal hormones. A bit like taking the contraceptive pill in a woman, it will suppress all your own internal hormones. So if a man takes loads of extra testosterone, the body thinks, oh my goodness, we've got tons of this stuff. We won't make any of our own. Right?
Homeostasis.
Yeah, voila. Mm. Very good. Well, look at you. So, but then that will mean that the person's own testosterone is very, very low, suppressed. And so actually, their fertility at that moment will be very low because they're not making their own testosterone. But when they stop taking the testosterone, the worrying finding from the study I'm referring to in Australia was that it takes a long time for your own internal production of testosterone to reboot and to regain your previous fertility. So that's one thing. And also, you know, you can have too much of a good thing because the effects of testosterone are to increase, you know, hemoglobin, red blood cells, and you know, it also has an effect. I mean, that's a good effect, but if you have too much of a good thing, so now you've got really sticky blood and you're much more prone to getting clots and problems like that. And also I've seen on blood tests, I can see what's happened. It really messes up the lipid profile if you've got really high testosterone and messes up your liver because the external testosterone is processed in the liver. So it puts a real strain on your liver, okay? And you see the liver enzymes. I mean, you know, that's what I see in the acute thing. And, you know, everyone says, oh, it's reversible, I'll stop and everything will come back to normal. I mean, you know, we can't be sure. And certainly in terms of fertility, that was quite concerning, this study showing that actually, you know, it was taking, year or whatever long. And does it, you know, people haven't been followed up that long to really know these long-term effects, you know? So, yeah, scary. Messing with your hormones. Like I said, millions of years of evolution, the hormones have got their act together. They know what they're doing. If you try and mess up with it, then, yeah, you know, it could end badly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Amazing, amazing. No, the detective work that you've been doing is brilliant. I mean, very, very impressive. Shanti, do you have another question?
I don't think so. I mean, you mentioned fasting a couple of times in a way which led me to think that you didn't like it.
Well, maybe we could touch on that.
Sure.
I mean, listen, it's not that I dislike it.
No, I know,
it's that your hormones dislike it.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so I see a lot of athletes, exercisers, who have got or heard something that fasted training is a good thing. And so what they do is they wake up early in the morning, like at 5 or 6 o'clock. They go and do their run or whatever it is, their cycling, whatever exercise it is, fasted. And then sometimes they come back and they don't even really refuel properly then. Now, the problem with this is that breakfast is breaking your fast. So if you're fasted already overnight and now, you know, your cortisol is very high, the awakening and response of cortisol, now you go and do exercise, you're really, really piling on the stressors, right? So the cortisol is going to go higher, 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 right? So, and high cortisol has a bad effect, we mentioned about fat deposition, but also it dampens all the other hormones. Because if you think back to the saber-toothed tiger, this is not a time to be reproducing, is it? You haven't got the, you know. So the cortisol switches off lots of the other hormones, you see, and it dominates. So that's why fasted training, which typically is in the form of early morning training, or it could be another time of day. It could be that the person, maybe they have had lunch, but then they're going to go effectively fasted, like training like 7 p.m. and they haven't had dinner yet, so they are effectively fasted. So that's what I mean by fasted training. And hormones, especially female hormones, they love complex carbohydrate. They lap them up. They really like them. And so another thing I find with people who are doing this fasted training also tend to be the people who aren't eating much carbohydrate. So, you know, it's a double whammy on the hormones and basically messing them up a bit, okay? So that's why, you know, the hormones don't like fasted training, right? Not me. And we've got studies to show this. We also have studies, again, by the way, in my book, you know, I give the story, but I also, for those that want to go and read more and see what my evidence is, my proof, there's several pages of references at the back of the book. My son even was flicking through the book and he said, wow, you've got a lot of references. It's like, yes, because I know some of these things. I want people to be sure that this is reliable information, not just what I've just plucked off the latest social media post or something. Anyway, so, you know, the fasted training, it's we have this study that shows that even if you eat sufficient calories over the whole day, even if you do a balance sheet, as it were. I don't advise you do that, but say you did. They did in the study. If there have been big gaps, equivalent of mini fasts, then this has a bad effect on the hormones. Raises cortisol, decreases estrogen in women and testosterone in men. So the message is that hormones love complex carbohydrate. They love it consistently, please, right? Because it's like trying to drive your car when the tank is on empty or just warning light. So you wouldn't do that to your car, would you? Right? Because you know that the car will stop, don't you? You wouldn't drive around for ages and ages with the thing on the warning light, would you? So why would you do that to your poor body? Right? So you need to fill it up and so it can keep going, right? It's like, you know, you treat your car better than your body. Anyway, so that's why, in essence, fasted training and particularly low carbohydrate is not a good idea. I mean, I think the problem is that we do have an obesity epidemic. We have to be honest and clear. Yes, that is true. And I have spent, you know, several years working in diabetic clinics. So, of course, if I see someone come in the door who's overweight, who is eating too many carbohydrates and not doing enough exercise, this is a different person. Mm-hmm. To the type of person we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I know lots of people will come back and say, I know, oh, but I saw on social media and all this thing and fasted and it's good for, you know, metabolic health to fast. Yeah, we have to talk about the individual, okay? Even this overweight type 2 diabetic, I have to be honest, I wouldn't necessarily be saying fasting, by the way. I would say just keep an eye, keep the carbohydrate intake a little bit lower, right? Okay, because that is a hormone problem, diabetes, isn't it? Right? Because you've got too much insulin, because you've got too much sugar, blood sugar in the bloodstream, type 2 diabetes, right? So you have to, you know, your advice is tailored according to the individual and what their individual hormone status is, right? So that's really the important message.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
There you go. Aren't hormones lovely? I hope I've really convinced you. I hope I've convincing everyone, number one, to buy my book.
Absolutely.
Seriously? No, but anyway. No, but listen, that's what the book is talking about. Some of the stuff we've discussed that will be
fascinating because it's fascinating because there's no, people don't access this information easily.
You
wouldn't go to the doctor and sit for a 30-minute chat about hormones. Absolutely not. 10 minutes at the door, I need to see someone else. Yeah. It's so important. Your work is so, so valuable.
Thank you so much. So, yeah, there are lots of discussion about this and little hormone stories in the book.
Oh,
where I lovely. I give examples, obviously not the real people, I can't do that. You know, different characters, but also characters that I have seen or bits of various people I've seen over the, you know, understand what I mean. Give an example. Here is this person. This is how I do my detective work. This is what happens. So, yeah, I hope people enjoy the book, number one, and get the information. It's all there in one place. And also, as I said, if you're thinking, listening to this or reading the book and thinking, oh, I think I need to see Nikki, then please do. Come and see me. You know, you can contact me. And as I say, I offer virtual appointments. And we really do sit down and discuss what's going on for you and try and work out the best plan, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you can send us, if you send us that info, we'll add it to the information.
Thank you very much. Cool.
Brilliant. Wonderful. Lovely.
Thank you, Nikki.
Well, listen, it's been a delight as ever speaking to you lovely ladies. We could do this every evening, couldn't we? But anyway, listen, so thanks so much for having me back on. And yeah, I'll send you over the various links and bits and pieces.
Great. Okay,
thanks so much.
Amazing. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Women Who Fight podcast. And credit to Will Grant for being our songwriter and sound editor. Please subscribe and share and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at womenwhofight.co.uk and check out our website for more content.